Hi, welcome to Babbling Books, a podcast about books and the authors behind them. I'm your host, Lily. You can find me on Twitter at Babbling Lily. That's Lily, L-I-L-Y, like the flower. Also, please follow me or subscribe wherever you're listening to this so you can get updates whenever new episodes come out. Today I'm going to be interviewing Margaret Owen, debut author of The Merciful Crow, which came out earlier this year. I first received The Merciful Crow from Oblong Books and Music in Rhinebeck, New York, as an advanced reader's copy, and immediately fell in love with its story of power struggles, the unbreakable bonds between family, whether found or biological, and learning to accept people outside your own community. The characters in The Merciful Crow are very much larger than life, and I absolutely adore the main character, Fi, as well as the rest of her crew. I tweeted at Margaret Owen that I loved her book the minute I finished it, and she replied that she was glad, and I sort of got flustered that this amazing author was talking to me, and we ended up arranging an interview over Skype. Our conversation lasted about longer than an hour before we got to the interview, and Margaret is such a fantastic person. I'm so glad I got a chance to talk to her. Her Twitter is whateatsowls, by the way, what_eats_owls, which is kind of an indicator as to how great she is. I mean, question for the ages, as she described it. In other announcements, I recently got my very own recording equipment, courtesy of my fantastic mother. So I will no longer be borrowing from Radio Kingston, although I will be forever grateful to them for starting me off, and you should still go listen to every single show they have, because they really are community radio, filled with amazing people. Without further ado, Margaret Owen! So what is The Merciful Crow? What's it about?
Oh boy. So it is about a girl named Fi, who is from the lowest caste in her kingdom, from a group, they are known as the Crows, and their job is to, basically handle the victims of this plague that is terrible. It will kill them within about at maximum 72 hours, and it'll do so horribly. And so, usually the way that people elect to address it when they discover that they've contracted the plague is to call for crows, whose job it is to mercy kill the victim and to then basically perform funeral rites for the body. And they do this in a way that means that the plague won't spread. That is Fi's life. Unfortunately, the crows basically act as this reminder to the rest of the country that they could basically fall to this horrible plague at any time, and they don't like that. And so the crows take quite a bit of persecution and abuse from the other castes in the country, but they are also the only ones who are immune to it, which breeds some resentment too. So yeah, they definitely exist in this very sort of perilous life, but they're also sort of bound by duty to be the ones who answer the call to contain this plague, because otherwise it just ruins the country. That's Fi's life up until the day the story starts, when she and her family are called to the royal palace for the first time in 500 years to pick up bodies of the victim who are from the royalty. And she discovers, after they've made the pickup, that actually not only are they carrying the heir to the throne and his bodyguard, but they're not actually dead. They're faking their deaths to get away from the evil stepmom in the scenario, who's trying to take the throne for herself. And they strike this deal that they basically say, look, my evil stepmom is going to try to kill all of you, so you should help us get to the prince's allies so that that doesn't happen, you know. And Fi says, that's great, I don't work for free, thank you, and basically extracts a promise from Prince Jasimir that if she helps him get to his allies and get to safety, then he will be basically contractually magically bound to improve the life of the crows and actually address the persecution that they faced. And that's like the first two chapters. Everything goes horribly wrong from there. It's great. But that's what it's about.
Awesome. So
thank you.
So an important part of your magic system, right, mm-hmm. is these teeth.
Yes.
So why teeth? What made you think, like, I know?
Right? What was I thinking? One thing that I don't think, I think some writers will cop to this. I don't know about all of them. I get most of my ideas in the shower because you're just sort of sitting, thinking, you're like doing something with your hands, but you're not really, you know, like, you're not being interrupted. It's almost like a not quite a sensory deprivation chamber, but it's not like something that's, you know, you have this undisturbed period of 10 to 15 minutes. It's very meditative. And so as I was thinking through back when I was kind of like cobbling together ideas of like, okay, well, I want them to have magic because I like magic and because it's a fantasy. I was thinking, you know, what would be a kind of unpalatable form of magic that they could have, something that would make people, that something that would give them abilities, but also would make people kind of be like, yuck, I don't like that. And it wouldn't be a way for them to sort of empower themselves as much as you would think. And I was thinking, what if they could temporarily call magic from other people's bones? That's terrifying. Like, if they have to contact or come in contact with a bone, they can pull magic from it. But like, also, the logistics of that are challenging.
Yeah. And so, Karen's bones.
Right? You can't just have like a bag of femurs. Like that's the especially if it contains only as the same amount of magic as like a chip of bone. And also like the idea that like you would have to remove bones from bodies, not great. And so I was like, well, wait a second. There's bones that we naturally shed, and they aren't technically bones, but nuance. Okay. But yeah, everybody's teeth fall out at some point or another, as you know, you have your baby teeth, and why wouldn't people just pay them in teeth instead if they asked for it? And so, yeah, that's where it came from, is it's sort of this combination of creepy magic and practicality. And I remember being in my shower and being like, what if it was teeth? And that was an interesting moment. Because I was like, yes, that would work really well and it'd be really gross, but it'd also be a lot more logistically sound than, you know, again, the bag of femurs.
So in a more, wow, time really does fly. Okay, in a more rapid fire sense.
Exactly.
Is this culture that you've developed specifically, you know, research? How?
Research how? So that was a tricky thing that I wanted to try to pull off, because unfortunately, when you look at the world, at our world that does exist, you know, contemporarily, for a story about, I've got a siren going by, as always. Thank you for choosing this moment to express your opinion, Mr. Ambulance. I don't know if you can hear it in the background.
A little bit.
Okay. Just go away.
I can edit it out.
Yeah, I had a rocky start to that question anyway, so. Okay, there we go. Okay. So, when you are thinking about, or when you look at the world as it exists, as we know it, for me to base it on, base my fictional country on any other country in the world would have been challenging, and I don't think I would have done it very well to be, you know, at all.
Mm-hmm.
My cat is playing with a toy. Mr. Darcy, now.
I love that name.
He's very sweet, but he's also quite obstructive. Okay, thank God. Very sweet, has a terrible sense of timing. But yeah, so it wouldn't. I don't think I would have done a good job of basing this country on any other country in the world, specifically because there were nuances to it. I have a story where the bottom caste is, or the main character is a person in the bottom caste. And if she had been white, then my options were to have a story where everyone is white or where white people were being oppressed by brown people. Obviously, neither of those are great options.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I'm also extremely aware that a lot of the people who have the vast majority of the issues that other countries have, particularly when it comes to prejudice and when it comes to exploitation, the people who are doing those look a lot like me. And yeah. So when it came to coming up with a society where, you know, it was going to be a story about oppression and persecution, the reality was, if I'd based it on any country that or any real world country, the oppressors would be looking a lot like me. And that was something that, and I would also be taking that spot from that narrative from a real world writer out there and telling a story that wasn't mine to tell. And so when I was thinking about this, I worked with some sensitivity readers, and I worked with a lot of folks to make sure that this country stood on its own. It didn't feel like any particular country with the serial numbers filed off. It felt like its own unique society, even though some of the problems are familiar. It isn't necessarily supposed to be an analog for any one country, but that was sort of the social research aspect of it, is working with people to actually make sure, or working with people and doing research to make sure that what I was, you know, writing into it wasn't just, you know, analogous from a specific country.
I'd like to say thank you to Margaret Owen for making this interview possible and chatting with me. If you missed it earlier, her Twitter account is what_eats_owls, and that's also her Instagram and her Linktree, etc. Please order Merciful Crow from your local independent bookstore, or Barnes & Noble if you have to. Amazon is awful, do your best to avoid it. Merciful Crow made me laugh, it made me cry, it's stolen my soul and I don't want to get it back. Also, there is teeth magic and lots of burning things down. If you like fantasy, that is also a way of examining our current social structures and then destroying our current social structures. Read The Merciful Crow. There is a sequel coming out. Margaret keeps referring to it as Too Crow, Too Merciful on Twitter. This book is amazing. This book is fantastic. Read it. Thank you for listening to Babbling Books. I'm glad you joined me.